This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Everyone is familiar with the mad rush that characterizes retail in the weeks and months leading up to holidays. Halloween and Easter fund the candy industries for the rest of the year, and Thanksgiving marks the official beginning of Christmas doorbusters. Even Passover sparks a retail frenzy in places like New York City. But where are all the Ramadan specials? With a Muslim population slated to rise to 6.2 million by 2030, American businesses can no longer afford to neglect that huge market and consumer base. Tanya Basu discusses the missed retail opportunities in ignoring the rising Muslim population in an article called "Why Are There So Few Ramadan Marketing Campaigns?" that she wrote for The Atlantic. Tanya, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you for having me.
So I just touched on the demographic, but let's break it down, this potential customer base retailers are missing out on. What is the makeup of Muslim American families in age and income, for example?
Right. So it seems like the Muslim population is growing in the U.S., and it's actually going to be the largest outside of the Middle East, except for Russia and France. So the U.S. is projected to have a huge Muslim population, and it doesn't seem like there's too many advertisers paying attention to it just yet, though they are starting to, and that's because many of them are between the ages of 18 and 39, which is the so-called millennials, and they are a huge demographic in terms of purchasing power since they're about as well off as the average American household. And additionally, they're the country's second most educated religious group, which means that they're getting jobs in white-collar positions that are paying very well and are they're therefore able to purchase a lot more. So in demographically, they're kind of a dream demographic.
So why then have marketers been steering clear of advertising directly to Muslim populations, especially for something like Ramadan?
It's kind of a twofold thing. Some people that I talked to didn't want to come out and say that it was racism, but they did point to Islamophobia, especially in a post 9/11 environment. And many of them were actually affected by the Whole Foods issue, which basically in 2011, Whole Foods started a Ramadan campaign, was the first brand in the U.S. to do so. And they were met with a slew of bigoted emails and a response from some members of the community who wanted products that were promoted for Ramadan to be taken off shelves. So a lot of marketers are not exactly, they're not racist or anything, but they don't necessarily want to have anything associated with being anti-American per se, and I say that in quotes. So that's an issue that a lot of people don't want to come out and say, but that is definitely a problem in marketing. And a second problem is that a lot of people are not exactly educated about Ramadan. So people think these people are fasting all day and then they're eating at night. So what's the point of marketing to them? And they don't realize that a lot of the holiday is actually sort of comparable to Christmas in terms of you're buying a lot of gifts for family members. You are buying food, but you're also buying things for yourself that you might not necessarily buy during the rest of the year. So there's an entire merchandise market that can be taken advantage of during this time of year. And I think a part of it is definitely an education issue in terms of what people understand about the religion and the holiday itself.
Let's go back to this backlash at Whole Foods in 2011. It was working with a company called Saffron Road for the most part, a company which uses only products sourced from sustainable, family-owned farms. And they were promoted for Ramadan by Whole Foods, which of course is an upscale supermarket here in the U.S. How did it affect sales?
So that was a surprising thing. I talked to Adnan Durrani, who is the founder of the company, and he said their sales went up 500% during that promotion, which is huge. I mean, for basically a startup company, and Durrani was even telling me that actually many of its customers from their studies weren't even Muslim. They were actually just members of the community who were interested in the fact that here's a product line that is sustainable, that's anti-GMO, that is organic. And that in itself is something remarkable in terms of the fact that the Muslim advertising campaign does not necessarily have to be focused purely on adherence to the Islamic faith. It can also be so broad as to welcome in people of other faiths, of other demographics. And I think that was a really big lesson that Whole Foods learned from Saffron Road. And they've been able to try to incorporate that into their marketing campaign since. And they've been doing pretty well, actually, since then.
So sales went up 500% for that one company. Obviously, it's working. And the global marketing giant Ogilvy & Knorr has set its sights on the Muslim American population in the U.S. So what is its strategy?
They're trying to not necessarily focus on food. They're looking at alternative products. So fashion, I actually initially got this idea from seeing this ad in DKNY for their Ramadan line, which is very interesting in terms of trying to combine modern fashion sense and a modern aesthetic with their requirements of Islamic dress.
Mm-hmm.
So DKNY has done a pretty decent job at marketing for that. I'm not exactly sure about their sales, but they got a lot of social media attention after they put out that marketing campaign. And I also mentioned the story about this really cool company, Inglot, which is creating a water-permeable nail polish. And that's really important because Muslim women cannot have anything on their hands when they worship. And this is kind of going around that legally by creating a water-permeable nail polish, which is completely fine by Islamic standards and allows these women to paint their nails and just be a normal girl during these times. So a lot of these companies are being extremely creative in how they're marketing to Muslims and creating products that allow them to practice their faith while also being American. And I think that is kind of the sweet spot for a lot of these marketers. They're looking for this product that allows these people to maintain their American identity while also allowing these people to continue practicing their faith.
So it requires businesses to know something about the culture that they are marketing to, obviously. Any historical precedent and also, I don't know, landmines. I mean, if you are a company who says, oh, I'm going to start marketing to Muslim Americans, there's a big market there. Couldn't there potentially be some sort of suspicion or even backlash to making a buck just because a demographic is growing and there's a potential market there?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people I spoke to were actually hesitant about expanding sales to Muslim Americans, and they were Muslim American themselves because they were looking at this as, we're starting to commercialize our religion. Is that necessarily a good thing? And a lot of people have complained about that with regards to Christmas, for example, where the holiday itself kind of loses its meaning in the commercialization of it.
Kind of does.
All those gifts and buying and purchasing sprees. But I think a lot of people are actually looking forward to having Ramadan recognized by marketing campaigns and stores and brands because it provides an education implicitly of the religion, especially post 9/11 when a lot of people had, I wouldn't say Islamophobia, but definitely had concerns about Muslims in general. This is a great way for them to educate them, other people, about the holiday and what it entails and the fact that, hey, we're Americans too. We eat, we have fun, we dress up, we do things that you guys do, we just have a different faith. And that's something that I think is inherently American. I mean, marketers have been doing this for years in terms of trying to reach out to different demographics. I'm thinking about Kwanzaa, for example. I mean, that was not a huge holiday even when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s. But it's starting to be something that a lot of marketers are paying attention to because there's this demographic of people who, I mean, they have this purchasing power that they're able to practice. And if you can actually personalize the shopping experience for these people while not alienating others, that is a sweet spot of marketing in terms of capturing an audience who you might not have otherwise marketed to and able to increase your business and have potentially an entire group of people who will be purchasing your products for now and into the future.
Tanya Basu, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank Thank you so much for joining us today. If you like what you heard, there is much more to explore at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also follow us and send us your feedback or share ideas for the program on Facebook and on Twitter. We find the most fascinating stories tend to travel by word of mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Please join us for more of them tomorrow at 2 on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Word of Mouth is produced by
Taylor Quimby,
Logan Shannon,
and senior producer Maureen McMurray.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals
and not those of NHPR,
its board of trustees,
or its underwriters.
To subscribe to our podcast and listen to past shows,
go to wordofmouthradio.org.
Word of Mouth
is a production
of New Hampshire Public Radio.